Before we start, I want to just say thank you for having me again. And this is the second installment of our 8-week mini course on busting the illusion. I want to just take a moment and invite Jesus and any other ascended masters to be here tonight to facilitate this teaching and this learning that we're all sharing in. And may it be what everyone most needs. I think that it's important to talk about the false self because the more we know about the false self, the more choice we have around it. Ignorance is not bliss in this case. Ignorance of the false self is likely to mean identification with it. So as we become more aware of what the false self is and what it's up to, we can begin to detach from it and disidentify from it and see it for what it is. So we're going to talk about exactly what it is. The ego is the programmed sense of an individual self. It is the sense that we are separate individuals in the world. So it's not a thing, it's programming. It's programming that makes us turn around and answer to our name if it's called. So we need that. We need some amount of ego to function as a human being, as a character in the world. And we're meant to be a character in this world. And so we do need an ego. If you don't have that much of an ego, you will not be able to move around, converse with people, do your work, probably even feed yourself. So we do need some ego. And I like to make the distinction that what we don't need is the egoic mind. The egoic mind is that thought stream, that voice in your head, that ongoing commentary about me, myself, and I, and how everyone else thinks about me, myself, and I. The universe centers around the me in one's own mind. It does. So the thought stream is a voice that is centered around the me. How am I doing? What should I do? What happened a year ago? What am I going to be doing a year from now? All about me. How do other people feel about me? How do I relate or rank in relation to the other? So even when your thoughts are about other people, they are essentially about me, about how other people feel about me. When you get enough distance from your thought stream, from this commentary in your mind, you begin to see what's going on there. In that thought stream is a mixture of egoic thoughts like, I need this, I want this, I like this, I don't like this, combined with conditioned thoughts, such as, don't touch a hot stove, and you have to work hard to be successful. The conditioning's pretty similar from one person to another in a particular culture. So our thought stream, our commentary, is not very different from one individual to the next. The ego's pretty much the same, and the conditioning has a lot of similarities. The conditioning is full of shoulds and coulds and can'ts and don'ts and won'ts and things like that. And that's pretty universal. Only the specifics change a little bit. So this thought stream is in service to the ego. It's in service to the character that you're playing, but it's in service to the ego. And the character, in fact, what we discover with awakening is that the character actually doesn't need the thought stream. But the thought stream does define the character initially. When you're awake, you no longer have that self that is defined by the thought stream. That's what I'm calling the false self. The false self is all of the ideas about you. I'm fat, I'm tall, I'm young, I'm old, I'm rich, I'm poor, I'm a woman, I'm a man. All of the ideas you have, all of the programming you've acquired over the years, all of that defines you. But the you I'm talking about is the character or the false self, the you that you believe yourself to be. So the beauty is that this you that you believe yourself to be isn't actually necessary for you to be. And that's what people discover when they awaken. That's what enlightened people know. They operate without regard or relationship to a self that is defined through the thought stream. They may still have the conditioning and thoughts that make up the thought stream, but they no longer identify with them, meaning they no longer believe that that is who they are. So the false self is an idea of yourself. It is the ideas that we've been taught about ourselves and ideas we have concluded about ourselves based on experiences that we've had. For instance, if someone had an embarrassing experience in school, then they might conclude that people don't like them or that they're silly or that they are not as good as someone else. So we pick up all of these definitions of ourselves along the way. We conclude things as a child, even as a baby. We conclude things about ourselves, and that becomes part of our programming. And that programming is reinforced or told to us through the thought stream. We know about the programming through the thought stream. Of course, there's lots of programming that's also in the subconscious that we don't know about. But once you begin to become aware of the thought stream, you see who this person is that you are programmed to be in this lifetime. Now, this really wouldn't be a problem so much if the person we were programmed to be was positive, upbeat, happy, and able to be courageous. But in fact, the egoic programming is quite the opposite. And most of our conditioned programming is quite the opposite. Most of our false selves are full of negativity, fears, worries, all sorts of desires that are programmed that don't necessarily bring happiness. Let's first take a look at what the general egoic programming is that composes the false self, because this colors the entire thought stream. So the ego is a very primitive aspect of ourselves. It was designed for survival. In order to survive, one of the things that is useful is to be able to discriminate differences. So a primary aspect of the ego is that it sees differences and it's able to judge that something is different from itself. It's able to see that there is an animal lurking in the grass that might be dangerous. So it notices what stands out, what's different, what isn't like itself, what's separate from itself. And this is a basic survival mechanism. And to that extent, it's useful. It's useful to be able to tell that apples are different from oranges, or that there's something moving in the forest that might be dangerous. This is all very useful. But what happens is the thought stream gets full of fearful thoughts that have nothing to do with the actual environment. So it's like the thought stream is the ego on steroids. The thought stream is the ego given a voice, this primitive aspect of ourselves, given a voice. And it's a pretty crazy voice much of the time. It's a very negative, scary voice. It's worried, it's afraid. And another one of the really prominent characteristics of the ego, in fact, you could call it a definition of the ego, is that it sees lack everywhere. You could say the ego is a sense of lack. And if you notice the thoughts in the thought stream, you'll see that many of the thoughts are about lack. I don't have enough money. I'm not thin enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not smart enough. I don't have a nice new car like so-and-so. The thought stream is full of thoughts like that. In fact, it's shocking when you come to see how it almost always, as a first reaction to something, it sees lack. For instance, it looks at somebody else and it sees how they might be lacking according to its conditioning. And so there's a lot of judgment that goes on in the ego. So the ego is fearful, it's lacking, and both of those qualities cause it to need to be right and need to gain power and need to be better than others. Because if it feels lacking, it seems that the remedy for that is to become better than other people, or to be more right, or to be special, or to be more powerful. So those become the ego's goals, and those get represented in the thought stream as I want. I want to be successful. I want more friends. I want more money. I want more hair, more clothes, more cars, more, more, more. That is the solution to the sense of lack. And embedded in that solution is the idea that more will equal happiness. So the thought stream pretends that it knows what will make people happy. It pretends to know, but it's all based on its own sense of lack and fears. And what it thinks happiness will come from is more power, more money, more beauty, more comfort, and so on. But we know that happiness does not come from those things. Essentially, it comes from much deeper things that the ego knows nothing about, and the ego does not point to, and it does not lead you towards. In fact, the ego is the block to finding true happiness. So the thought stream is full of lies, outmoded conditioning, unnecessary chatter, and useless advice for how to live your life. So here we have a very antiquated ego that's been given a voice, and it is trying to guide our lives. And it does this under the guise of being our own very own voice. I should do this. Oh, I need to do this. Oh, if I don't do that, I'll never get ahead. It hides under the guise of our own voice. But is that who we are? And that's the question we begin to ask after enough suffering is experienced. And that could be many, many hundreds of lifetimes of suffering before we ask that big question. What is going on here in the mind? And are these thoughts my thoughts? And are these thoughts useful? And why am I suffering? And how can I stop suffering? And that's a beautiful point in one's evolution when those questions are asked. But until that point, people are very convinced that that I that they give voice to and that I that speaks to them in their head, in their thoughts, is actually their true voice. That's truly who I am, they think. And is there any wonder why people have trouble with self-esteem? If that is who you think you are. I know my voice is not very nice. And if I gave voice to it, I would not be very nice. It's judgmental, it's unkind, it's even mean sometimes. Not so much anymore, but it was. I know what it's like. And everyone has a voice like that, that is unkind, petty, judgmental, mean, superior, wants to be right, puts people down. How can you feel good about yourself if that's who you think you are? And how can you feel good about yourself if that's what you're giving voice to? And how can you have good relationships? How can you have a relationship at all if that's what's running your life and if that's what you're giving voice to? It's no wonder that people suffer so, because what they're giving voice to is the opposite of love. It's the opposite of what will lead to happiness. And yet, this seems like all we have, and everyone else is giving voice to it. So it must be true, right? So it's held in place because everyone else is in the same trap, caught in the same illusion. So the illusory world is created by the thoughts about ourselves and the thoughts about other people, because our thoughts about other people are an illusion also. There are imaginations about other people. Our own thoughts cannot contain the truth about ourselves or about other people. They're just much too narrow. They are stories we tell that are very limiting. And because they're only partial truths, they're actually lies. So as long as we're living in this world of our thought stream and believing it and believing that that is who we are, we're going to be very unhappy. It's impossible to be happy. It's impossible to have relationships that are loving and kind and generous when we're living in identification with that thought stream. So the only possibility for humanity and for love is to move beyond it, to see that the I thoughts are not who we are. Oh, and this is such great news. This is such great news. Because you don't want to be that I. Nobody wants to be that I. No one wants to be that suffering, poor, limited, lacking, never good enough self. So one of the ways, of course, we try to fix the thought stream and fix this false self is by making it more positive, by creating more positive I thoughts, by planting positive I thoughts into the mind, and that's good practice. That does work. We can reprogram the mind with positive thoughts, with affirmations, with the truth. The truth is always positive. The truth is always loving. The truth is all-encompassing. So whenever you reframe your negative thoughts to include more of the truth, to be more positive, to be more kind, to be more loving, then you've done good work. That is part of the work of waking up, is reprogramming the mind so that it is more positive, closer to truth, closer to what your true self would say if it had a voice in your mind, which it doesn't, perhaps unfortunately. So what to do? What to do? The only thing that we can do is drop out of the voice in our head, or at least get enough distance from it so that we can see that it's false. And then once we see it's false, we can make a different choice than listening to it. We can choose to be here now in the body and senses in the present moment. And if we stay in the body and the senses and the present moment long enough, we'll find ourselves dropping into true self or essence. And then you will actually experience the love of your true nature, the wisdom, the peace, the calm, the all is wellness of your true nature. So it is really just a thought stream that is the problem. Understanding that it's the problem and noticing what thoughts are in it and seeing that they're not true, and then disengaging from that thought stream and turning your attention somewhere else. And where else can it go besides your thoughts? The only other place it can go is in whatever you're seeing, whatever you're hearing, whatever you're sensing on more subtle levels or in other ways through your senses. That's reality. There's nothing else here but that simple sensory reality, which includes subtle sensing, like intuition and energy flows and things like that. But that's all there is here. So how complicated is this actually? It's not really very complicated at all. There is an egoic mind that pretends to be you. And then there is the true self, which has no voice whatsoever. It speaks to us, communicates to us intuitively and through urges and drives and a sense of yes and a sense of no. But it's not verbal. Sometimes people say to me, well, I don't know the difference between my intuition and my thoughts. But really, there's quite a difference. It's really quite obvious. Thoughts are thoughts. The voice in your head is quite distinct from no voice. And so I want to just examine a couple other of the qualities or things that the egoic mind does that set it apart from true self and make it what it is. One of the things that keeps the ego in place and the egoic mind alive is opinions. The ego loves opinions. It doesn't even necessarily examine its opinions. It just has opinions about everything. Have you ever noticed how quickly it forms an opinion about someone you just met or about anything, really? It instantly forms an opinion because the ego wants to know. It doesn't really want the truth, though. It just wants to know. So it pretends to know something. It forms an opinion. And that's its pretense at knowing. And then it can relax and feel safe. So an opinion is a sign that you are identified with your egoic mind. An opinion is a thought that feels a certain way in the body. If you pay attention to how your opinions feel, you'll notice that they cause your body to contract. They make you feel small. And there's a certain righteousness about it that drives them and makes you want to pound your fist on the table or speak a little louder. And there's something that feels good about that. It's the ego's version of feeling good. But if you really check in your body, stating an opinion doesn't feel good at all. It feels contracted and small. Now, that's not to say that you can never have an opinion or that you never land one way or the other on some side of the fence. It's just that when you understand what opinions actually are, you can choose to hold any opinion that you have more lightly, because what you know is that the opinion doesn't contain the whole truth. No matter what opinion you have, it doesn't contain the whole truth. And the opposite opinion also doesn't contain the whole truth. Nobody's got the truth, you could say. Anyone who's holding an opinion does not have the whole truth. That's the ego's world. It's a world of half-truths, partial truths that cause conflict and cause one person to feel better than another or worse than another. That is reason to judge somebody. So opinions, the more you buy into your opinions and the less you hold them lightly, the more you're reinforcing the ego. So any thought that you believe that is part of the thought stream reinforces the ego and the conditioning. And that's going in the wrong direction if you want to awaken. If you want to awaken, the direction is to not reinforce your thought stream by holding those thoughts lightly or not holding them at all, by not listening to them, by not giving voice to them, by not believing them. That's how you stop reinforcing the thought stream and become free of it. But the more you believe your opinions, the more you speak them, the stronger your ego becomes. And the more you're going to believe those opinions, the more you are invested in believing those opinions. And so you're going to have to speak them even louder. So how can you hold them lightly if you're going to be speaking them a lot? You can't really hold them lightly. The ego is very invested in being right. And this is one of the most damaging things to relationships. Because when an ego is in a relationship, it often would rather be right than it would be loving or in a relationship. The ego wants to be right rather than be loving or even be loved. And so it will fight about what it wants or how it sees things and try to get the other person to change because, of course, it has the right point of view. And it is right and the other person is wrong. And this is what most of the arguments are about. They're arguments about whose conditioning is right and who needs to change their conditioning to comply to the other's conditioning. Well, relationships can't really survive that. So for relationships to work, people have to drop out of the need to be right. They have to be willing to put love before judgment and love before being right. And the only way they can do that is if they're able to see that judgments and opinions are not the truth. They are never the truth. They are the ego's truth. They are not the true self's truth. They can't be the truth because they don't have enough of the truth in them. And therefore, they are a lie. A perspective, which is what the ego's opinions or judgments are, a perspective can't be the truth. The truth would have to be beyond perspective. It would have to include all perspectives. So that is the dilemma in relationships. Two people have two egos. Both of them want to be right. Both of them judge. Both of them believe that their conditioning is superior to the other's and the other should comply to theirs. And never the twain shall meet. So as long as people are believing their thought stream and believing that their judgments are righteous and right and correct and that somehow they are meaningful ways to improve others, which they aren't. As long as people believe that about their judgments, they're going to have problems with relationships. So the thought stream is not just destructive to one's own ability to be happy and live the life that you're meant to live and be fulfilled and be present in the moment and aligned with your true self. It's also destructive of relationships. So there's no good reason to stay identified with, to stay in love with your thought stream. It doesn't do anything for us. It doesn't keep us safe. And that's a really important point because fear and worry are the most basic tools of the ego that are designed to keep you listening to the thought stream. The ego tries to scare you It tries to make you believe that if you don't listen to me, if you don't listen to these words, if you don't listen to your conditioning, to this voice, to what you should do, you are going to not survive. And as long as you believe that, you won't venture out and go beyond that conditioning and discover that there's nothing to be afraid of. That is, in fact, what you discover when you do venture beyond that voice and start acting more courageously and doing what feels right on a deep level. When you start doing what feels right, what your heart moves you to do, what makes you happy, what brings you joy, not just living your life according to your conditioning, according to shoulds, you discover that life is very trustworthy and it supports us, and it always has been supporting us. And that, in fact, the opposite of what the ego tells us is true. The ego tells us the opposite of the truth. It says, you will not be safe if you move out of your thoughts. If you stop believing these thoughts, you will not be safe. That is the big lie that holds it all in place. And how are you going to get beyond that lie unless you venture out beyond your fears? And the way you do that is that you see that fear is a thought that comes from the ego. It's just a thought. It's a thought that becomes cloaked in feeling of fear. If a fearful thought is believed strongly enough, then it is felt in the body, and then that feeling in the body makes the thought believable. But the fear is just a thought. And where did that thought come from? It came from the primitive ego. That ego does not know how to guide your life. It does not know how to predict the future. It knows nothing. It's just pretending to know. It's faking it. It's totally faking it. And it's laughable when you begin to see that, except it's not really laughable because it hurts people who believe it. It hurts them. It limits them. It prevents them from living the life that they're meant to live. So it's very important to see that fear completely belongs to the ego. And I'm emphasizing this because I want you to know that the divine self never uses a fearful thought to protect you. If you saw a lion coming at you and your body would go into fight and flight and it would feel fear, now that's appropriate fear. But there was no thinking involved in that. That was actually the fear that we were designed to have. But that isn't the fear that most people feel. Most people live a safe enough life that they rarely feel that kind of fear, where they're actually bodily threatened. So I'm not talking about that fear. That is not the voice in your head. I'm talking about a fearful thought in your head. A fearful thought is a negative thought about the future. A fearful thought is always about the future. It's not about the past. It's not about the present. It can only be about the future, as if the ego knows what the future entails, but it doesn't. Our minds are full of fearful thoughts about the future, and they are all lies. You can totally disregard them. See them as lies. Notice how many of those kinds of thoughts are in your mind. And if you have a lot of fearful thoughts in your mind, it's because you've been paying attention to them. If you withdraw your attention from those fearful thoughts, they will begin to weaken and slowly drop away. So you won't have many fearful thoughts in your mind at all. I'm not aware of any fearful thoughts any longer that I have, because I find them laughable. They aren't believable. The deepest self is so wise. It knows how to move. And part of this deepest self is the body. All the conditioning that protects you is in the body. And the deepest self will move your body out of the way of something that is dangerous. And the deepest self will motivate you to do what you need to do to take care of yourself. It will help you to survive. It will bring you opportunities. It will bring you people into your life that will help you survive. It wants you to survive. So if you stop listening to your mind, what you are left with is divine momentum in your life that will move you appropriately, safely, and in ways that will support the life that you're living, the life that it wants you to live. But you won't find that out unless you venture beyond your fearful thoughts. You won't find out how trustworthy and reliable and wise your own beautiful self is. But of course, your wise self is playing a part in your life every day. It's never absent in your life. Sometimes you choose to pay attention to your mind instead of your wisdom. But there are lots and lots of moments in your life where you are just acting out your wisdom and you're speaking your wisdom. You can't help it. You jump out of the bed in the morning. Who does that? What does that? Do you think your ego does that? Do you think a thought does that? Your thought is just pretending to be you. It doesn't do a darn thing. You're the life that is living you jumps out of bed, lifts the spoon to your mouth, sees out of these eyes, listens out of the ears. The life that is living you is what is here and living. But the illusion is that there is another self that has problems, that has to fix everything, that has to figure out how to live. That's the illusion. And it's very, very convincing. It's not that easy to get beyond it. If it were, this would be such a different world. Because even those of us who have worked very hard to get beyond it are still often caught in that illusion and forget, get lost from time to time. So it's very tricky, but it's fine. It's fine to get lost in it. All you have to do is remember and pull yourself back out. And it's a process. It's a learning process. You begin to learn how to do that. And you do it more and more. And before you know it, you are living more and more in essence and less in the thought stream. So that is the process of moving from the thought stream to your divine essence. And it can take years and years and years. Or not, but generally speaking, it takes a lot of practice moving away from thought and into the present moment. And meditation is what will really help you learn to do that. Here's a question. Could you address if there is a male and a female ego? Well, I think that the ego is the ego, but females have female conditioning and males have male conditioning. And conditioning is, I guess you could say, part of the ego, or ego is part of the conditioning. I'm not sure how you want to slice it, but the ego and conditioning both together create the false self. What is the purpose of life? We don't really know the answer to that. We can intuit it. We can make assumptions based on what feels true on the deepest level. And many people have, and many have had mystical experiences of oneness and come back saying, the purpose of life is the oneness breathing and experiencing life. I also do feel that we each have a particular life purpose, and I've written about this some in my books. And I think that life purpose is described to some extent in a general sort of way in the astrology chart. I've been an astrologer since the early 1980s. We're all here to play a certain part in the whole, and that's our life purpose. And we usually are able to discover it and do it to some extent because we are programmed with certain motivations and drives that help us to fulfill that life purpose. Somebody's asking, why would life need a purpose? The idea of a purpose is a bit of a concept, and yet here life is doing this thing that it's doing. Life itself is the purpose, I think. Whatever it's doing, learning, creating, exploring, discovering, expanding, evolving, all of those things are going on in this life, in humans, in other entities, other living things. So perhaps we can assume that creating, learning, evolving, learning to love, loving, all of the things that we thrive on and that we love to do and that are naturally accomplished in life is the purpose of life, perhaps. I think that most people do feel that life is purposeful. They may not know exactly what that is. I think that believing that it's purposeful is one of those beliefs that we don't know for sure if it's true or not, but it's a helpful belief. To believe that life is purposeful helps us stay in a positive frame of mind. To believe it's not purposeful would be more like what the egoic mind might tell you to make you depressed. And so I would throw that thought out and take the positive one. So as far as beliefs go, I do think that some beliefs are closer to the truth. And the closer to the truth our beliefs are, the happier we'll be, the more in alignment with love and peace we will be. So I say, throw out all the beliefs that don't lead you towards love and peace. Keep the ones that do lead you towards love and peace, because that's what works. We can't really know for sure, but I go with what works. Yeah, love is its own reward for living. It's a reason enough to live. The purpose, if you wanted a really general purpose for life, it's love. It seems that the creator must really love creation to have created it. When you think about how much we love what we create, including our children, or how much we love what is created, I think it's probably safe to assume that perhaps the creator is doing creation for the same reason. But we don't really know, and that's okay. But love works. And so let love be your guide. Let love be your purpose. And if you're wrong, well, I don't know. You will have lived a good life. I don't see how you could be wrong. Someone wants me to say something about self-hatred. I mentioned this in the beginning. It's very hard to love ourselves if we believe that we are the voice in our head, because most of us have a very negative voice. So the ego is the negative voice, and then the ego is also the creator of the feelings of self-hatred about the negative voice. It's got quite a stick going. It creates the problem, I hate myself, in order to try to find a solution. And what is its solution? It tells you, you have to lose weight, work out, make more money, and then you're on the ego's bandwagon, aren't you? So it creates a problem, like I hate myself. It creates negative feelings. And then it tells you how to solve it. Work out, stop eating sugar, and so on. And then it also is the saboteur of all of your best intentions. So you can't really win when you are following that path. It keeps you involved with it. That's its goal. The thought stream is trying to keep you involved with it. As long as you're in the ego's realm, things don't work. There's no solution. And then it will just come up with another problem. And then it will just come up with another solution. And then it will sabotage that solution. So round and around it goes. It doesn't want you to know who you really are, because then you'll drop out of the thought stream altogether and you'll start living your life as you're meant to without its interference. And somebody said, if I achieve great things, will I stop self-hating? Ted Turner did an interview and someone asked him why he did what he did. And he said, because he felt he wasn't good enough. And then they asked him, well, are you good enough now? And he said, no, I'm still not good enough. That's the ego's world. You're never good enough. You never get there. There's no end to achieving. Because success is a concept. What is success? As soon as you achieve success, the ego redefines it in a different way. So it's got quite a stick going. It's got most people doing its bidding. And that's fine. It makes the world go round. People go after their desires, their egoic desires. And there are lessons in that, necessary lessons for human evolution. People are learning and growing by making those choices. So there's nothing wrong with that. But at a certain point, we're meant to wake up out of that, out of the illusion. And we're meant to live from this deeper place more fully. And so there's nothing wrong with following the thought stream. It's the source of suffering. So in that sense, there is something wrong with it. But from the standpoint of God, you could say there's nothing wrong with it. It's as it is intended. It makes the world go round. People have lessons. People learn. People hurt each other. They learn to love eventually. It creates all the drama in this world of duality. Then we get to wake up out of it, thank God. We get to see the truth. Because this would be a rather cruel world if the truth weren't behind it.